We're here today to talk about Star Trek and all of the people in the room, including myself. I'm Andy Robbins, have had an involvement with Star Trek as fans and viewers for pretty much their whole lives. I'm speaking with Rick Chambers, who's a public relations professional in Kalamazoo, but more importantly, in this context, he's written scripts for one of the online continuations of the original Star Trek series of the 1960s, and with Andrea Johnson, who lives in Kalamazoo and is well known around the country as a science fiction blogger. She's shaking her head, but it's true. And has some opinions about Star Trek, and that's what we're going to be talking about today. And I thought, first of all, have both of you weigh in on what you feel the cultural impact of Star Trek has been and its longevity. The first episode of the original series aired in 1966, I believe, after two pilots. I think the first one was on 1964. And there are very few shows that people still talk about in any depth that are that old. But Star Trek is talked about quite a bit, as we're doing here today. So, Rick, why do you think it's lasted so long in all of its iterations?
Well, it's pretty amazing that we're talking about. I'm both excited and disturbed that it's been 50 years, right? Because I remember watching the series when it was first on, and I was very young.
And you had kind of a bad fright there.
As a matter of fact, the first episode I remember seeing was the Corbomite Maneuver, which was one of the very first ones that was produced and aired in 1966. And I remember being at my grandparents, and my then teenage uncle was watching it. And Baylock, the alien mannequin, as it turned out, in that series was so frightening that I remember hiding my face in the cushions of the couch and not touching Star Trek again for another 4 years when it went into syndication. But, you know, 4 years, a little bit more sophistication, and I was able to handle it at that point. But to your question, you know, why has Star Trek endured? Really, I always say there are three reasons why Star Trek has had such a cultural impact and why it's endured so much. One is the idea of hope. Remembering that Star Trek came out in the 1960s when, we were looking at the quote-unquote evil empire of the Soviet Union. We had an unpopular war going on in Southeast Asia. There was a lot of social upheaval going on. And people were wondering, will this nation, will this planet endure to the time of, the 23rd century? And Star Trek said yes, and it will be a better place, a place where everyone has an opportunity to succeed and to grow and to thrive. So one is that issue of hope. Two is issues. The fact that in the 60s, we were becoming more aware of some of the social challenges that were going on. Star Trek was willing to tackle those in a way that really caught people by surprise, caught them off guard, and forced them to sort of think differently about some of the things that we were facing as a nation. And finally, story. Really, our human society is rooted in the idea of story. It's how we share our history. It's how we share our culture. And those things together, hope, the idea of tackling issues and telling meaningful stories are really behind Star Trek's endurance.
Andrea, you came along a little bit later. And in fact, I think your first real exposure was with the first TV follow-on, which was The Next Generation, which started in the 1980s. So why do you think it's still going on?
A lot of the same reasons that Rick mentioned, and a lot of the reasons that you mentioned that were important when original series first aired are just as important to viewers now, and really to anybody now. It's kind of funny. The more things change, the more they stay the same. And a line that I have used a lot in science fiction critical writing and in talking to other science fiction fans is science fiction has always been a safe place to tell the truth. You may not be able to talk directly about political issues, but in a future, you can, and you don't risk stepping on anybody's toes. You don't risk getting in trouble. You're taking on some risk, but it's a very safe environment to talk about hot-button issues. And fans and really anybody is still worried about what's this country going to look like in 100 years? What's the Earth going to look like in 100 years? What are our responsibilities to our fellow Earthlings? Something I really loved about Next Generation. I was just at the right age. I discovered Next Generation and a love for astronomy at the same time. And it was suddenly, I'm watching this on television and I'm reading all of these astronomy books and my mom takes me to the Children's Science Museum. And every week I have a standing date with my dad to watch the new Next Generation episode. Maybe I could grow up to do some of these things that I'm seeing on television. Maybe I could grow up to care about diplomacy. Maybe I could grow up to care about all of the things that Captain Picard talks about all the time. Making people's lives safer, ferrying diplomats across the galaxy from one planet to another, stopping violence. That's what really resonated with me, was we can be better people and we can make people's lives safer.
Now, as we mentioned, the Next Generation started in 1986, I believe, so about 20 years after the launch of the original series. Most people think there are a lot of continuities between the two, but there's also some differences, like the effects are a lot better and the acting, some people say. Would you agree?
It was a different era, right? And so I'm always a little reluctant to compare acting styles between, you know, decades that are separated by decades. It's certainly, I would say, by the time The Next Generation came along, it was a little more in line with the sort of acting that we're used to in today. I would agree with that.
And just to remind folks, there were six TV series based on Star Trek, if you include the animated series that was in the mid-70s, and most hardcore Trekkies or Trekkers, some prefer, do include that animated series, the last one being Enterprise, which ran from 2001 to 2005. The others were Voyager, Deep Space Nine, and The Next Generation that we've just mentioned. There is a new TV series coming up that the CBS is doing, and we'll talk about that in just a bit. There were six movies based on the original series, starting in 1979, and then four more based on Next Generation. And now we've got three, starting in 2009, that were initially run by J.J. Abrams, who's now gone off to run the Star Wars franchise. And those departed in a significant way from the canon, if you will, of Star Trek in some ways. Let's talk about that new movie, which is coming out on the day that people will be hearing this, July 22nd, Star Trek Beyond. It's the third one in that series, as we've mentioned. Abrams chose to do some interesting things. In one of those movies, he blew up the planet Vulcan, which was the home of Mr. Spock. That never happened in the TV show. And some of the changes that were made within that reimagining of Star Trek have not gone down entirely well with some of the old-line fans. Are the old-line fans important anymore, or are they aiming at the people who've never heard of Star Trek before?
I'll actually take it probably at a little bit more practical perspective on it, and that is the whole idea of from the 2009 film and on was, as I understand it, J.J. Abrams has described it, is canon for Star Trek, because Star Trek had been around at that point for more than 40 years, had gotten so complex that it was basically hamstringing any opportunity that it was to create new and exciting stories. You always had to be like, well, what have we done in this space before? And so they came up with the idea of an alternate reality, which wiped away all the old canon and gave then the writers of the new films the opportunity to write new stories. And you're right. There are a lot of fans that struggle with that. I admit I struggle with it. But it is a clever approach. So I wasn't quite as upset. I wouldn't have blown up Vulcan. I understand the approach. I would probably say I'm not as big a fan of the J.J. Abrams films as some others. But I also understand that they're probably not reaching out to me. So to your question, old-line fans, I think that Paramount wants old-line fans to enjoy the new Star Trek, but they can't limit their outreach to that. films today cost hundreds of millions of dollars to make, and they have to make hundreds of million dollars more on top of that in order to be considered a success. Batman versus Superman made $850 million, I think, worldwide, is considered a flop. Where do you go from there, right? So I have to hand it to Paramount Pictures of saying, we want to honor the perspectives of old-line Star Trek fans as much as we can, but we also have to reach out to new ones, and that's the approach that they're looking at.
In the run-up to the release of Star Trek Beyond, the latest movie, Chris Pine, who's the actor who plays Captain Kirk, and has won a lot of praise for, you know, returning it to more of the ambiance of William Shatner's Kirk of the 1960s, he caused a few waves by saying that it was impossible today to put into Star Trek some of the intellectual elements that had been there previously in earlier eras because the audience just won't sit for it. Do you think that's true?
I don't think it's true, but I think it's harder now. I think that the movie-going audience is looking for a different experience in a film, any film in any genre, than they were even 15 or 20 years ago. If you were to take a Star Trek VI, which is one of my favorite of the original series films, or even Wrath of Khan, Star Trek II, which is my favorite by far, and try to put that in a theater today, you would be challenged to make the sort of income and generate the revenue in the box office that they need for a film to be successful. So I think it's too bad that we have to that the most popular films are ones that rely so heavily on special effects and explosions and all that kind of stuff. But that's the reality of it. And so, you know, the challenge then for the Simon Peggs and J.J. Abrams and Justin Lins of the world is how do we meet that need of the movie going public today, but still tell a story that we want to tell?
Andrea?
I got to collect my thoughts for a second.
Well, while you're collecting those thoughts,
I'll
put in as an aside, Rick mentioned that his favorite movie amongst the ones that were based on the original series was The Wrath of Khan, which was the second one. Most people seem to pick 4, which is The Voyage Home.
When I was a kid, that was my favorite. And now I watch 2 and 3 back-to-back, and they're my favorites.
Are they?
Okay. Yeah.
That would be Wrath of Khan and Search for Spock.
Yeah.
The Voyage Home is sometimes referred to as the whale movie.
Yes.
because whales, specifically humpback whales, play a very important part in the plot. It was perhaps also the first one where the cast didn't take themselves totally seriously.
It's the comedy one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is 4.
Right. So it apparently was popular at the box office because you didn't have to be a Star Trek fan to enjoy it. Have you collected your thoughts?
I have. Abrams has taken what us nerds always owned and taken it mainstream. And going mainstream isn't a bad thing. You know, after all, Game of Thrones has gone mainstream, and I suddenly have a lot more friends that I can talk to about it, even if they've never picked up a George R. R. Martin novel. But Star Trek was always about science and exploration and building bonds between people for me. Kirk and Picard were on missions to boldly go to explore, to find new things to be about science, to be about the future. And I don't see any of that in the new Abrams films, in the new Star Trek films. They're about action. They're about adventure, which are two wonderful things. But they don't feel like a Star Trek movie or a Star Trek story to me. It's action. It's explosions. It's somebody punching somebody else over a petty disagreement. It doesn't feel very Star Trek. I'd be very interested to see what happens if movie theaters, perhaps a movie theater like the Alamo that often brings in older films, that as Star Trek Beyond is running, bring back The Wrath of Khan. See how many Star Trek fans who loved Star Trek Beyond and have never seen an original series film respond to The Wrath of Khan after watching the Abrams films. I think that could be really interesting to show people, you know, yes, it's wonderful that you have discovered Star Trek. Let us show you where this movie that you love, let us show you where it came from.
one thing that we didn't talk about when we were talking about the legacy of Star Trek was, and I'm speaking of the original series in the 60s, a lot of people who became scientists and engineers in NASA and other high-tech fields have said that an important reason why they did that was watching Star Trek when they were young in the 1960s. And I'm guessing, based particularly Andrea, that, 20, 30 years from now, young people having watched these new movies perhaps may not have that experience.
I don't think they will. I think they'll maybe yearn to be an action hero. And whatever Kirk was, he was a lot more than just an action hero. And Chris Pine is just an action hero.
We've been talking about the reboot of Star Trek by J.J. Abrams, although he's no longer directly involved in it. That world that's been created in those now three movies is going to be taken further by CBS in a new TV series, although perhaps TV series is the wrong name for it, because except for perhaps playing the pilot, they're not going to show it on CBS television. You won't see it on Channel 3 or another CBS affiliate. They're going to be having it on their streaming service, which is called All Access, I believe. And you will have to pay for it. None of us have seen much of anything of that new series other than to know that it is directly inspired by the Abrams reboot. Do you think there are enough people out there, fans and otherwise, who are going to be willing to plunk down $6 a month or whatever it is to see one show?
I think the possibility is there. I mean, when CBS announced the new series a few months back, and a lot of the diehard fans that I know were just saying, well, I'm not going to watch that because it's going to be in the JJ verse, as they call it, which actually years at the first time I've heard that it's confirmed that it's in the JJ verse, because last I saw there was still a question about that.
Yeah, so that's the rumor.
But that is the rumor. You're right. But with people like Brian Fuller involved, Nicholas Meyer, who is the director of The Wrath of Khan, as I mentioned, there's some people and some writers that they're gathering to be part of this. I'm cautiously optimistic. Andrea makes a really good point about, action adventure being sort of the underlying thread for so many movies, including Star Trek movies. Now, Star Trek has always been best when it's on television, because it has then the time, the opportunity, the depth to tell real, meaningful, impactful stories. And so the fact that it's going to be back, even though it's on a pay-per-view, for lack of a better term, forum, I think that's where Star Trek thrives. And I think that's where maybe we can get back to what Andrea was talking about the stories of science and adventure and inspiration and the hope, the issues, the storytelling that I mentioned earlier. That will happen on television as opposed to what can happen in 2 hours and 20-odd minutes on a theater screen.
I hope they take the PBS route, where, yes, it's pay-per-view. Yes, you have to access a show on PBS isn't pay-per-view, but you can watch the show on television, and then a week or two later, they stream it on PBS.org for a very, very short window of time. So if you set your alarm, you can watch the show for free. So if CBS is smart, they will set up something like that, because, yes, there are fans who will happily plunk down $6 a month to watch Star Trek on CBS and any other CBS shows that the network puts on All Access. But are there enough fans where CBS is afterwards going to say, wow, this Star Trek show was such a success? I don't think so.
It does seem rather curious with a property like Star Trek that has these legs that we've been talking about, that they're choosing not to put it on free over-the-air television.
Well, I think with the success of so many shows that have been direct to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime, I think one that occurs to me is The Man in the High Castle, which was on Amazon. And
based on the Philip K. Dick novel.
Exactly. And how many people latched onto that and how excited they got. It's an interesting experiment for CBS.
But those people who watched The Man in the High Castle probably already had a subscription to Amazon Prime, right?
That I can't answer. I don't know.
How many people are going to say, well, I already subscribe to Netflix and I already watch shows on Amazon Prime. I'm going to sign up for another service to watch a show. I wish that the new Star Trek show was on an already popular streaming service so that all the person has to do is click a button on their remote control and they get to watch it because they're already subscribed to that service.
And I think that's the experiment that CBS is trying to see if it is there. Is there the interest and the willingness to add that extra $6 onto your credit card or whatever every month to do it? It may very well not work. They may very well have to look at, can we also cross pollinate it with Hulu or an online tool so you watch it a week later or something to that effect. That remains to be seen. So,
well, I guess we'll just have to say there's a lot of questions about how this new Star Trek series is going to pan out, and it's supposed to start in January of 2017, according to the current plan. I guess we'll find out. Some things that you can watch online for free are some continuations of Star Trek, especially the original series from the 1960s. Rick, you've been involved in one that's known variously as New Voyages and Phase 2, Star Trek New Voyages Phase 2. You've written, I believe, 4 scripts now.
Yes.
That have been produced in that online series. It tries to, in the look of the props and the special effects and the audio, it sounds just like the show from the 1960s. They have the same uniforms, and the effects are better because, technology has come along. Why do you think people want to do new stories in that universe that's now 50 years old?
Well, actually, the interesting thing is this goes all the way back to when the series was originally on. And Gene Roddenberry once made a comment about this, how he was blown away at how much fan fiction had jumped from his idea for a television show. And that carried on all the way through the 70s and 80s and 90s and so forth, and eventually led to, many, many, many Star Trek novels, lots of fanzines that were produced. And as we got into the days of the internet and the nascent YouTube type of opportunities that were out there, where people started taking that into the visual realm. So Star Trek New Voyages launched in 2003. It was an idea by entertainer James Cawley, who was a Star Trek fan from a very young age, who said, I think that there are some great stories yet to tell in the visual medium related to the original series. And so his intent was to create a series that was absolutely faithful to the original. He bounced the idea off of CBS, which by then owned and still does the television and internet rights to the series, and said, this is what I want to do, but I want to make sure that you're comfortable what I'm doing. I'm not making any money off of it. I'm not charging people to watch it. I'm not doing any of those kinds of things. This is just for the opportunity for fans to come together and to create new and exciting Star Trek based on the original series. And CBS gave him permission to do that. So there have now been 10 episodes released. As you said, I've written 4, 2 of which have been released as part of those 10. And it's been an amazing experience. I mean, I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that I would get to write even 1, let alone 4 episodes of a series that got canceled 47 years ago. So it's been just an amazing experience.
And how better for a fan to show their love for something? So many fan films are just a love letter to this movie or this TV show or this comic book or this whatever influenced my life in such a strong way that I want to give back to that world by writing fiction that takes place in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Trekverse is huge. We will never run out of stories to tell.
And New Voyages is not the – Phase 2 is not the only one. There's Star Trek Continues. There's Star Trek Farragut. Probably there are several others. And then there's Axanar.
Yes.
Which doesn't even use Star Trek in its title, but is set in the Star Trek universe. And they have online, the last time I checked, a 20-minute demo or trailer of the movie that they are trying to make. It's extremely sophisticated in its effects. It easily could be shown in a movie theater. If you're a fan of the science fiction genre in movies and television, you will recognize a lot of the actors who are involved in it. But they ran into trouble with Paramount and CBS on the rights issue. And there is a lawsuit aiming to shut Axanar down. And new rules have been released by CBS and Paramount about what these fan-based projects can and cannot do. They're quite restrictive, and some people seem to feel that it basically marks the end of the ability of people like James Colley and his and yourself and the other people involved in New Voyages to do the way you've been doing. That lawsuit has not been settled yet.
That's my understanding.
J.J. Abrams reportedly asked Paramount to drop it. But then subsequent to that, these new very restrictive rules were announced. So there's that tension then between, you know, the fans take a universe and make it their own, but someone owns the rights to it.
Correct.
How do you resolve that tension?
Well, you know, this again is my, sort of my perspective on the whole thing, but I think it's important to point out that CBS and Paramount actually favor the idea of fan films being done. Otherwise, they wouldn't have created guidelines. They would have simply said, you can't do this anymore. But this has been coming for a while. I think as fan films have become more sophisticated, as the number of them have grown, and that it's just really an issue of the owners of the intellectual property, which is CBS and Paramount, saying, you know what, we probably need to create some guidelines around this so that people know what is and isn't acceptable. You know, the challenge is that some people think, well, this is the fans own Star Trek. No, they don't. CBS and Paramount own Star Trek. But at the same time, they're saying we do want to give some latitude for fans to be able to exercise their creative energies around a franchise that, you know, is just as important to us. So these guidelines came out. Now, you know, I admit as I look at them, I struggle a little bit. Some of the things that I might have done in the past or would want to do in the future may not meet muster under those guidelines.
Like what?
For example, length of episodes. I believe one of the rules is they have to be 15 minutes long, or you can do a two-parter for a total of 30 minutes on a particular story.
But no 60-minute
But no 60-minute episodes. So obviously that impacts, you know, the shows like New Voyages and Continues and Farragut and other ones that you mentioned.
Yeah, although it's fair to say with advertising, you only got 45 minutes.
This is true. So we're getting they're not that far off, right? So there's some things, and then there's some other limitations in terms of bringing in name actors. You know, so all the shows really have brought in actors that have been affiliated with Star Trek in the past and so forth.
Can't make money on it.
You can't make, which is always the case. You could never make money on it. And there's some restrictions now around crowdfunding, which actually was one of the things a long time ago when crowdfunding started in the fan film area. I thought this could be the thing that causes a problem. But CBS and Paramount actually said, well, we'll allow it to a point, but we will allow it. So, you know, then what's going to have to is going to have to be a little bit of sifting, right, in the Star Trek fan community and saying, okay, so these are the rules. How do we play by those rules and still do what it is we want to do?
And if fans are anything, they are creative.
Yes, absolutely.
And I had a similar reaction that you did when I first saw these new rules. Kind of my mouth dropped and I said, okay, this is going to make things fairly difficult. But fans are incredibly creative, and I see these new rules as forcing people to get very creative, doing very different things. Maybe some fan fiction will return to fanzines that are handed out at a Comic-Con, that are printed at somebody's house, that are privately distributed. Old school, underground. I have thoughts of Star Trek plays that are performed once live and only once at Comic-Cons, at fan events, at conventions. You're still following the rules, and you've gotten very creative to create the fan fiction and the fan art that allows you to write a love letter to Star Trek.
You know, back in the especially starting in the 70s, when fanzines about Star Trek and other shows sort of had their heyday, we didn't have the YouTube. You didn't have the digital filmmaking equipment that we have today or the editing equipment. Do you think that an approach like Andrea was just talking about is going to be enough to satisfy fans who that's what they expect, is to be able to make a show that looks like an episode that was aired in the a lost episode that was never aired in 1968?
I think Andrea hit it right on the head. Is the fans are nothing if not creative. And while, there's some angst out there about the new guidelines, I think it's important to reiterate that CBS and Paramount want fans to be able to exercise their creative capabilities to foster that love of Star Trek through fan type productions, and that they'll find ways of doing it. So whether it's little files handed out or emailed or posted, where we continue, I think you'll continue to see things on YouTube and so forth. But they'll find a way, and I will bet that it'll be some very creative stuff that comes, maybe even more creative than we've seen in the past.
Captain Kirk always found a way, so we can too.
That's right, exactly.
It's probably worth noting and fair to point out that with Phase 2 New Voyages and some of the other ones, they got pretty significant technical help from Paramount in terms of blueprints of the old props and the sets and stuff so that they could recreate them.
I will tell you, the sets for Retro Film Studios, which has been producing Star Trek New Voyages, are absolutely faithful to the original Desilu sets from the 1960s, right down to the color of consoles, the color of buttons and where they're placed. I mean, everything. James Cawley is just an absolute meticulous designer of that. And in fact, they're putting final touches on, they've been slowly sort of upgrading the sets in Ticonderoga, New York, where the series has been shot, ahead of actually a Star Trek convention that's happening in August, the weekend of August 12th. They call Trek Conderoga. And they're going to have Star Trek guest stars there from the original series on up. Keira D'Elia and Gary Lockwood from 2001 are doing it. And so it'll be an opportunity for people to actually go into those sets. And it feels, I can tell you from someone who's been there four times, it feels like you're walking through the corridors of the Starship Enterprise. It's really amazing.
It's like going back in time.
It is. It's very much or forward, depending on how you want to look at it, right? There was actually a moment they were doing this thing at Trek Conderoga last year where people could be beamed, from the transporter. And there was one young man who got up on the transporter console and they were going through the, the motions of doing it. And he started to weep. He actually started to weep because for him, this was a dream come true to be standing on the transporter platform aboard the Enterprise and experience that. It was just mind-boggling.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's beautiful.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
We've talked about, the creativity in all aspects of Star Trek. And from what I've read, the transporter was created by Gene Roddenberry, the original producer of Star Trek, and his team, because it would be too expensive on a weekly basis to send shuttlecraft down to the surface and back up again. Doing the special effects in a believable way just wouldn't fit in the budget. So someone said, well, we'll just beam them down. And that's how they came up with it.
That's exactly how they did it. Yeah. And how many – that's become like sort of a favorite part of Star Trek for so many people is the transporter room. And it's amazing what to Andrea's point earlier about how creative you get around Star Trek. That was a creative way to solve a very expensive problem.
Now, I want to return just briefly as we wrap up here to the J.J. Abrams, J.J. verse, Abrams verse of Star Trek. There's a new controversy that's just started within, as we sit here in the last few days. Simon Pegg, who is Scotty in the three new of the new movies, is also, I believe, a screenwriter, at least on this one. And he announced just within the last few days that the character of Hikaru Sulu, the helmsman, who was played in the original series by George Takei, is going to be revealed as being gay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Takei is himself gay and has been a very forthright advocate for the rights of LGBT people, but he has said he thinks that's a mistake. Mm-hmm. Do you think whether it's this or making significant changes in you know, dare I say it, historic figures. I mean, what are the limits on creativity and how far can you depart from the pattern before it starts to break down?
J.J. Abrams can do whatever he wants. The writers of the Star Trek movies can do whatever they want. As Rick said earlier, the fans don't own Star Trek. As much as we would like to, we don't. And having an openly gay character is what many in the viewing public now simply expect. How that will change Star Trek fan fiction, I think it will simply open it up to a larger variety of types of stories. People that may have felt, I don't see anybody who looks or acts like me in this world, now can say, there's someone I can really connect to because they're just like me. And for a long time, that's what Star Trek was about finding someone, about a diverse cast who has diverse experiences. Isn't this just the next logical step?
I think it's important to point out that I don't think George Takei was against the idea of a gay character in Star Trek at all. In fact, he's been very much an advocate for that. I think he was struggling with the idea of Sulu suddenly becoming being identified as gay because he hadn't been before then. And, you know, two things, really. George was the one who sort of, well, the character was created by the writers. He's the one that really made it real. And he always played the character as heterosexual. And the other was just simply that he thought it would be a great opportunity to create a new character with a new background, as opposed to taking one that would then apparently appeared to have been closeted all this time. So I think that's where his reaction was. But to Andrea's point, you're right. When we see Star Trek, we want to see people that reflect ourselves and our society and our community. So it's time for that to happen. In fact, New Voyages had done this with an episode, Blood and Fire, written by David Gerrold of The Trouble with Tribbles, the original series, that had a gay character in it. So that's what Star Trek is. It reflects what our society is today and where we need to go.
Which is probably why we're still talking about it.
That's exactly right.
I've been speaking with Rick Chambers of Kalamazoo and Andrea Johnson, also of Kalamazoo, two big Star Trek fans, as am I, Andy Robbins. Thanks so much for coming in to talk about this today.